Welcome to the Punk and Pile Drivers Podcast here on the Backbreaker Media Network. And now, your host, Big Bad Boris.
The Punk and Pile Drivers Podcast has returned here on the Backbreaker Podcast Network. I think I said that correctly. There's some restructuring in the parent company. My name is Big Bad Boris. We're doing Ask Boris Volume 2. And of course, to help me out with this, I introduce the godfather of the Backbreaker Media Network, Mr. Mike Maloney, Mike Malawani, Mike Mawalani, as Scotty would say. Mike, how the hell are you?
I'm doing good. And yeah, you know, if you look under Apple Podcasts, we're considered Backbreaker Wrestling Podcast. But other than that, it's same old, same old. You guys can find us in the usual spots. So
business as usual.
For the most part, just had a little bit of an expansion here in the last couple months. So,
oh, hey, it's growing.
That little weed just getting watered and blossoming.
Ooh, very good. Very good. Before we get started on this, I want to talk about a couple of things. First of all, the absence of podcasts. First of all, it's because I've kind of run through a lot of my friends that I've used as guests, and I don't really want to do this too much by myself because I think people would be bored listening to me talk. But I've talked to a couple of people over the past week or so who are interested in coming on. So my pledge to you is to get these out more regularly. And the other reason is, quite frankly, I'm just tired. I have a job that's can be pretty physical at times. So by the time I finish that and then I go to the gym, so I'm not a big fat 40-year-old, I'm pretty white. And I kind of lose motivation and stuff. And that's on me. So I apologize for that. And I'm going to try to get these out on a little bit more of a regular basis.
Well, let me chime in here as well, because, you know, I am the owner and whatnot. My philosophy always been here is this is meant to be fun. This is supposed to be informative, of course, but the number one thing is it's supposed to be fun for everybody involved, whether it be the guests, whether it be the owners, whether it be the people presenting the podcast and whatnot. I know that we're getting, even the same thing happened with the Goose here as well. We're going to be getting a Monday Night Shaw coming up next week with Holden Albright with him. I've just told everybody there's no pressure here. You get in what you can and we'll go from there. When we're going to send stuff out, and I know that Boris will talk about production stuff later on in the Q&A here, but one thing we guarantee is we always want to provide quality stuff. So if it's not going to be up to the standards that we want for you, we're not going to send it out. So
yeah, for sure. And speaking of the Goose, it's looking like he is going to be my guest next week, now that you mentioned him. So that should be interesting because, quite frankly, because he's never, to my knowledge, worked for PWA, and I've only met him at clandestine shows, I really, like, he seems like a really, really good guy. I don't know anything about him. So this is going to be a good opportunity for me to learn a bit about him and what he's all about.
Oh, he's absolutely one of the best. And, you know, he's a feel-good story from coming back from a lot of people putting him down and getting on his case about what he was doing in wrestling and turning into what I would say is one of the more popular wrestlers in Alberta right now.
Definitely over. Another thing I wanted to talk about really quickly, you and I partook in a live event last Friday night, did we not?
Oh, absolutely. The Love Wrestling Show last Friday at the Rec Room in South Edmonton. Absolutely fantastic show.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. The matches were all really, really good. I think the venue is a really, really unique kind of venue for wrestling, and I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, in terms of the show, the parts that I got to see, because, well, if you guys had caught up on my Twitch stream, I sort of told you they tried to throw me a little bit into production here, and we weren't able to get the online program up, but what I got to see was great, and I can't wait for when the YouTube or the Twitch video comes up, whichever way it's going to go. I've already talked to Spencer over at Love Wrestling, and I'm going to be doing a live watch along for the show after it's been presented. So people who want to ask their thoughts and feelings about that, we are going to be doing that over on ye old Twitch channel, which I'm really starting to have take off here, not only with myself, but the inclusion of new people in the Backbreaker Gaming channel. So
is there any ETA on when that's all going to be ready to go, that show? Do you know?
One thing I try not to do is pry when it comes to video production. And I think we're going to talk about that in the last segment here.
Yeah, I felt bad.
It is. Go ahead. Sorry, I was just going to say that I'm thinking it should come up in a couple weeks here. I would like to help him. I know I've talked to him before, and it looks like we're going to be helping out a little bit on both our ends in terms of helping out with the production part of it, just to make sure it goes smoothly next time. And I think I'm going to steal the words that you were going to say. I feel real bad for Warren for the not being able to commentate that show, because I know he's really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I just felt bad in general that, you know, they couldn't get the Twitch stream going, because especially, you know, if you promise something and the show sold out, so there was other people who wanted to watch, and it was unfortunate they weren't able to watch that live. I felt bad for Warren, because Warren was ready and he was excited, and it was good to see Warren. I don't think physically been in his presence for at least over a year now, so it was great to see him in person. Actually, Scotty was down there and Brando was down there, so like all the pieces of the Sat Pod were all in one room, I think, for the first time in a long time. Yeah, I think a couple of things that really stuck out. I thought that Michael Allen, Richard Clark, and Artemis Spencer really killed it. The main event, MRB and
Randy Myers.
It was interesting for me because there was a couple of callbacks in that match that I feel like, and I'm not saying this to sound like I'm a dick or anything, but I feel like I was the only person in that room to get it, just because it was thrown back to some things that had like the way things were a long, long, long time ago. Like when he called for that toasted bagel and he hit that toasted bagel and then Clark kicked out of it. I'm not going to lie, I got a little bit emotional because that's stuff from like over a decade ago. So it was really, really cool to see them call back to that. And that's one match that I wish, no disrespect to the other guys, but I wish I could have called, because I think I could have added a little bit of extra oomph to that match to take it even better. But it was really, really good.
Yeah. For me, like I did have a top 10 that I talked about on Twitch last week about the priority of matches, the listing, and it pretty much went bang on from what I thought. Clark and Spencer, absolutely fantastic. Blaze and Myers, that to me, that was pretty much what you would consider a stereotypical booking of ECW mid 1990s in one of those classic matches they've had. Mm-hmm. Not the hardcore stuff involved, but you have all these spots going like crazy and it ends with a roll up.
Yeah, and I think I want to give a shout out to Ava Lawless as well. She stepped in. She wasn't originally there to face Nicole Matthews, but Kayla James unable to make the trip, so she stepped in into a kind of a high profile match and the biggest match in her young career, and I thought she did really well. Also talked to her about being on the podcast as well, so kudos to her as well. Kudos to everybody involved. I know it's a big undertaking, especially for a show like that in a brand new venue and sort of a brand new company, but not. And, you know, to have all that kind of extra special effects and lighting and to try to do the live stream, it's a big undertaking for maybe some people who aren't, you know, who are getting their feet wet in producing a live event. So, I mean, they pulled off to the best of their ability what they could, and I thought it was really good.
Well, for me, first of all, I want to give a shout out to what I consider one of the best matches of the night nobody's talking about, and that's Zoe Sagar and Casey Spinelli. Mm-hmm. To me, Zoe just absolutely killed it. She had Matthews at clandestine one, and she came up a little short out there, but taking on Spinelli here, and the action was great. It had to follow up after a great Clark Spencer match up there, and they delivered big time. So, when it comes to Love Wrestling, like it was a. It was headed up by Love Wrestling. It was supported by Force Wrestling, but people learn. And I think this is something that people need to realize. producing a wrestling show is different than any other project that you would ever come up with, I think. More than live theater, more than a sporting event. It's just so unique on so many levels there. So,
and my favorite saying is, it's not easy to run the circus.
No, absolutely not.
It was good to see Spinelli back in these parts. She hasn't wrestled around here in quite a few years as well, as far as I know. So all in all, I had a really, really good time with that show. I got a chance to catch up with some people I haven't seen in a while. Some of the boys and girls in the locker room that I haven't seen in a while. So all in all, really, really fun. And I believe they're looking at planning another one in the new year. And if that's
what I've heard.
If that's not something I should say, then I apologize. And I would really love to be a part of it.
Well, I know that there are rumblings of starting in the new year. They, right after this show, when it's your first show, you're debriefing for a little bit. So we probably won't hear anything until the Christmas season, because you know they're going to want to sometime around Black Friday make sure the tickets are available if they're going to get a new show, because that's where all the money goes, right? If you're going to go to a January show, you get your money together Christmas and Black Friday and all that. So you have your money available for that then.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that's going to come across on video. Anyway, shall we begin the festivities? This is Ask Boris 2. It's kind of an idea that I stole from the Duke You Suck podcast. And again, I didn't have any guests lined up, and I didn't want to just blather on incessantly myself. And to be perfectly honest, I like being asked questions. I don't know why. I just like to throw my opinion out there. It's fun for me to have my brain picked, for lack of a better term. So you know what? Let's get to it.
All righty. So,
and thank you to everybody who sent in some questions, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you to everybody who sent in questions here. The authors of these aren't necessarily named in these, but at the same time, I've mixed them up so that not everybody's questions are going to be answered bang, 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 bang through the whole thing. So
they're in random order.
They're in an organized order based on topics. So that's the best way to put it here. Oh, so we're going to start with...
You've done more work on this than I have.
Well, I had an hour before the podcast, right?
I was watching the Flames game.
It's funny because we got a question about them coming up too here. So,
oh boy.
All right. Well,
it was 2-0 when I turned it off to do this. So hopefully things are staying that way.
Detroit's got 4 goals probably by now. Anyway. All right. Let's get to question number one here. So which wrestler do you secretly suspect of being 3 kids in a trench coat pretending to be all grown up?
The first person that springs to mind when he was wearing the coat would be the Repo Man. Because quite frankly, if you put the Repo Man in the coat and then put that like weird Robin mask, a bandit mask on him, yeah, he could pass for like three guys or 3 kids in a coat. He's got that high-pitched voice.
I believe it, except he was part of my favorite tag team of all time before, but
I love those old like vignettes of him like repossessing the cars. And my favorite was when he repossessed Macho Man's hat, because he said Macho Man missed it. Like, you know, remember when Macho Man used to wear those like big cowboy hats
back when he's on commentary. Yeah.
He said that Macho Man missed a payment on his hat and he repossessed his hat. Now, yeah, that's good shit.
That was, what was it, a 1-month feud with that?
Something like that. That's all it took.
All right. So
that's good shit, pal.
Question number two, and this is we got 2 5-part questions coming up here. So this is gonna be fun.
Holy.
First one. Which wrestler / personality would you like to see compete on these reality shows? Number one, Great British Bake Off.
Okay, I don't know a goddamn thing about what the Great British Bake Off even is, but it's funny you mentioned that, because I saw, I don't know if it was on social media or if it was on TV, that there's some cooking show on Peacock, and Drew McIntyre is going to be involved cooking on this cooking show. So if Drew McIntyre's cooking on Peacock, I think he could cook on the Great British Baking Show, and because he's Scottish, he'd probably be like the big heel, the baking heel.
Yeah, probably. I was going to say Kane, just based on his, what was that claymation show that they had on the network? I believe that was his job in the cafeteria at the school. Oh, I can't remember what the
claymation. Oh, like that Camp WWE thing, or
yeah, it was. Yeah, but it was actually like John Cena was a mechanic, and
oh, that thing. I can't remember what it was called. It was like kind of aimed at kids, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever saw that. Has there ever been like a wrestler with like a chef baker gimmick? I can't think of anything right now.
Not off the top of my head. It would make sense because a baking pan would be a great weapon.
I know Bash and Booger like to eat, but I don't think he cooked anything.
Ooh. All right. On that note, number two, RuPaul's Drag Race.
The first one that springs to mind was, what was his name? Orlando Jordan. Because he did something, kind of similar to that back yeah, in the day. He had that very Adrian Adonis back in his like WrestleMania 3 Piper feud days.
Oh, he took that gimmick to a whole new level there. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. Number three.
He was underrated. He was really talented. Oh. He didn't have a great look for like 2021, but like back in the day when you could be like a big chubby guy, like a Buddy Rose kind of thing. I mean, he was a great heel.
Well, the fact that he gained the weight and they gave him that gimmick because of it.
Yeah.
And he made it work. That's just fantastic.
And Adrian Adonis is a great name, too. He's passed away, I assume.
Yes, I do believe so.
Okay.
All right. Number three.
On a side note, if I can interrupt super quickly, positive vibes out to Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I guess he had surgery for something. I don't know.
Exactly. It was heart surgery.
Is that what it was?
He's out of it. His wife posted a picture of him giving the thumbs up, but he's still in hospital right now. So yeah, best wishes to Hacksaw there.
I loved him when I was a kid. I had a foam 2x4 when I was little.
Absolutely. All right. Number three, Love Island.
I don't even know what that is.
Basically, it's just everybody just trying to, you know, find love.
Oh, okay. Here we go. This is going to be a good callback. Before Buff Bagwell was Buff Bagwell, he had a gimmick as the handsome stranger. And I also think he wore like a Repo Man kind of mask like that. So yes, let's put Buff Bagwell as the handsome stranger on Love Island.
All right. I was just going to say, you know, he could just wear his American Males outfit with Scotty Riggs and
also
have them both part of it. But
or who's the guy, Garza.
Ah, yes. Perfect. Garza.
That's his name. I keep thinking Hector Garza, who is, I believe, was that his father? I assume that's his father, right?
Father or uncle, one or the other.
Hector Garza was super talented. He was real. I think he's passed away too, is he not?
I don't believe so. I think he's still around, but I'm not 100% sure. But
we might have to hit the Google machine on that one.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do here. Next one, and you have to pick two competitors for this one.
Uh-oh.
The Amazing Race.
Oh, okay. I got it. Again. This is all just, it's like, this is coming to me from above. Years and years ago, kind of in the height of the Attitude Era, they made Austin and Shawn Michaels tag team champions, but they were like reluctant partners, and all they would do was bicker. And it was a really short-lived thing that didn't last very long, but I thought it made for such good TV because they'd win matches and kick butt, but they would just argue and fight the whole time like an old married couple. And I thought it was really, really good. So I say, yeah, you take Austin and Michaels and throw them. How great would that be?
Oh, God, that would be hilarious. Austin, better yet, let's do Michaels and Hart out there.
Oh, Lord, they wouldn't make it past the fucking airport.
Probably not. And just to follow up here, Hector Garza did pass away in 2013.
Rest in peace, Hector Garza. He was good.
Absolutely. All right, and our last question in this topic here, Naked and Afraid.
I don't know what that is either.
Basically a survival show.
Where you're naked and afraid?
Basically, think of Survivor. Let's change it up if you don't know it there. Let's go with Survivor.
Okay, well, if it's Naked and Afraid, which is basically Naked Survivor, then you got to put Naked Midian on there.
Yeah, fair enough. All right.
Yeah, I got really good logical answers for all these questions.
I love the fact that you're not just throwing random people in here. You're actually, you know, got some logic behind these.
You know, it's how I do business.
Well, here comes your logic. Logic brain's going to have to go into overdrive here a little bit.
All right.
We're switching gears here, sort of. match these wrestlers with a punk band that best matches their personality.
Oh, Lord. I don't even. Oh, boy.
Number one, Jimmy Snuka.
Oh, boy.
Do we take a polite pass on this one?
Yes, we do.
All right.
Because my knee-jerk answer was Gigi Allen and the Murder Junkies, but that's not funny. So.
No, not at all. Pass. Next, Bruno Sammartino.
Bruno's like a old school, like a band that would wear like suits and ties, like the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones or something. Very, you know, very looking very official.
Absolutely. I love that pick. Dusty Rhodes.
Dusty Rhodes, somebody very kind of flamboyant. I would say like the New York Dolls, but Southern. The Southern New York Dolls, if that's
Southern New York Dolls, that'll work. The Brooklyn Brawler.
Oh, the Ramones. Come on, New York City.
There you go. And the finally, Leaping Lanny Poffo.
Leaping Lanny Poffo. Let's see. I might have to come back with that. I'm trying to think of like a very like poetic. I don't know. I have to come back to that one. That's a good question.
I love when you get stumped here, Boris.
Yeah, I might come back to that next week. I might need a week on that.
All right.
That's a good one.
Now, this is based on a statement and a question for you here. Why is Queen Sophie for President by The World is a Beautiful Place and I Am No Longer Afraid to Die the best song in the world?
I know who asked that question. It's my good friend Chris, and I'm not going to lie, I didn't listen to that song, so I can't answer that. I have no idea. But I trust his judgment. He knows his shit.
Fair enough. All right. Would Vans Warped Tour benefit take a traveling wrestling show with them on the road?
I think they've actually done that. I don't remember. And that's something else that I might have to Google. But I think that they've done that. And any kind of like big festival-y type tour sort of thing like that, I think would definitely benefit from wrestling. In PWA, we've done a couple of things like that. We did... we did Campus Chaos 1 year, which was, they used to do it at Nate on the big, like the big soccer field at the beginning of the year. And it was like a big concert and we did matches. We were the first thing of the day. And we did a few matches, in the ring set up on the field. And, I got to ring announce from this big stage, which I thought was kind of cool. This was back when I was ring announcing many, many years ago. I believe Swollen Members played that day, and the headliner was Finger 11. And we opened the day, and then we tore the ring down, and we got passes to come back in, and I got really drunk and watched Finger 11, so that was fun.
Nice.
And then we did another one, and I don't remember what the name of it was, but it was another similar thing like that, and I want to say it took place at Northlands. And we did matches. We had the ring set up beside the stage, and we would do matches between the bands. And I know Biff Naked was one of the ones that played because we actually got to sit in the ring and watch Biff Naked, which was kind of cool. But that was the first time, well, I guess not the first time, the only time that Yukon Jack punched me in the face.
Really?
First
time so far.
Yes, I was managing Tex Gaines back in the day, and we did some business with the folks from the Bear, and he punched me in the face.
So
if I can kind of go a little like non-kayfabe, I don't remember exactly like how like what led to what, because this was a million years ago, but I remember we were kind of had each other by the scruff of the neck, and we were just kind of like, he was like the hero and I was the bad guy, and he was kind of shaking me and I was kind of shaking him, and I just called for him to punch me. I'm like, this has to end in a good way. So I'm like, punch me. And he punched me and I went down and he was a hero and it was cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So, this has to be like definitely 10 plus years ago.
Yeah. I would say a couple things here. First of all, I got on the Google machine while you were answering that. And while they haven't brought an official promotion on tour with them, they have had tours where they brought in the local promotion in there. Companies include Interspecies Wrestling, GCW, AIW, Freelance Wrestling.
Okay. Those are some good companies.
They have. Absolutely, they have. And so they haven't actually This looks as 2016 as late as here. So,
And I know that download festival or whatever it was that NXT did matches at recently, that's like a big, like heavy metal music festival as well. So
yeah,
it's definitely not like a revolutionary idea. It's been done. And I think wrestling fits in really, really well with those things because it's an easy way to pass some time, you know, between setting up bands and stuff. It's, you know, something that, that there's going to be, you know, in a big setting like that, there's bound to be a handful of wrestling fans. And I think people at a festival like that who are just looking to have fun will try a new thing and they'll maybe watch the matches and they might, you know, they might not become fans, but they'll get into it for the afternoon. And it's, you know, it's easy to set the ring up and it's just a, it's a cost-effective, easy way to entertain some people between what they're really there for.
Absolutely. It makes the most sense. And I want to give a quick shout out here to Cobra Kai and all his work down in the BC area, because they do actually have a lot of this kind of wrestling going on out there. Even currently, they've had about, I believe, two shows already a couple of weeks ago. And then they're having another, I believe it's called Destroy Wrestling. They're having up in a couple of weeks here, the week after Remembrance Day here. So,
okay, cool.
Same kind of concept, but all right. Next question here for you, sir. Predict how long it'll be before Travis Barker shows up in a ring.
I don't understand the question. Is Travis Barker a wrestling fan?
I believe this is where the punk comes in part of it. So I didn't research this far.
Yeah, I have no idea why. I have no idea why Travis Barker would be in a wrestling ring, to be honest.
Fair enough.
Sorry, I don't understand that question. I apologize.
I think that was, well, it's Courtney Kardashian's husband, that's all.
All right.
Anyway.
Good drummer.
On that note, let's get to the second one here. Which of these artists will show up at a WrestleMania event, sort of like Mr. T tag teaming with Hulk Hogan way back when? You got five choices, five people to pick from here.
Okay.
Farrell, Fat Mike, Davey Havoc, Machine Gun Kelly, and Kanye West.
Oh, Lord.
Would you think any of them would be a part of it?
Okay, give me that list again. Pharrell Williams, no.
We got Pharrell, no. Fat Mike?
I don't know anything about him, so I'm going to say no.
Davey Havoc?
Maybe. I don't know like if he's a wrestling fan, but I could see, you know, him maybe wanting to get involved.
Machine Gun Kelly?
I also don't know much about him, but
he was the singer that got powerbombed by Kevin Owens through the table.
Yeah. And you know what else? I was really impressed. That Netflix Motley Crue movie, I thought he was really good in that.
Nice.
He played Tommy Lee.
Okay. Cool.
And fuck Kanye West.
Yeah, that's, thank you, though. Just move it on from there. What was your favorite appearance of a wrestler in a TV show as a wrestler?
The first thing that I thought of when I saw this, do you remember a show called City Guys?
Not off the top of my head, but it does sound familiar.
It was, I don't know why. I'm sure like when this was on, I was far too old to be watching it, but I love teenage melodrama and I always have. City Guys was kind of like Saved by the Bell, but like very, very urban, very kind of hip hoppy. And it must have been like maybe late, because I think it was still when ECW was in, so it had to have been late 90s. But RVD did an episode of City Guys as RVD, and it's fucking tremendous just because it's like cheesy Saved by the Bell type of a show with RVD on it, like being RVD. Super, super awesome. I'm sure if you hit the YouTube, it's probably on there.
Oh, absolutely. And
I know if Colton Kelly was asked that question, he'd be Vader on Boy Meets World all day long.
Well, probably.
He loves that shit. He loves that Boy Meets World.
Personally, for me, just for the cheese factor throughout the entire appearance, it would have to be Kevin Sullivan, Ric Flair, Macho Man, and Hogan on Baywatch.
I don't know if I ever saw that, but that sounds awful. a good way.
It was just as cheesy as you think it would be.
Excellent.
All right. And our last question before we head to our first musical interlude here. How many viewers/listeners did you lose when you decided to have the Sheik on your show?
You know, I got to be careful what I say, because I know that's from Bayrat Guarani, and he's got a problem with me, man. I don't know what I did. Maybe I called him the spaceman again when I shouldn't have, or something, but he's got an issue with me. But you know what? I thought that Shiki did a really good interview. I thought he was interesting. I liked talking about that documentary that he was in. I liked talking about his family and their reaction to him in the business. Maybe I'm going to have Mr. Guarani on the show to hash out these issues we've got.
Well, I hate to break it to him. I really do. I'm just, this is the one advantage of being the boss, right? So just give me one sec here. I'm just,
You going to crunch some numbers here?
Oh, I'm crunching the numbers. And right now, speaking of crunching numbers, the number one most downloaded episode on the podcast.
Wait, I bet you I know who it is.
Go ahead.
It's still Taryn, isn't it?
Barely.
Okay.
Number two?
Number two is MRB.
Nope.
No. Oh, okay. Tell me.
Sheik Akbar Shabazz.
Is it really number two behind?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that and Taryn, I think, was one of the early ones, second or third one that I did. But yeah, people seem to really respond to that, and I thought she was really good. I should have her back again.
Absolutely. Always good for a second time here, but
she won some gold at that Love Wrestling show.
Yeah, finally, when the title gets defended in an actual wrestling match, you know what happens to it? It goes to the right people.
That's right.
All right, so what have you picked for your first song, Boris?
All right, my first song, and I like that I have you pointing out when there are songs, because last time we did Ask Boris, I totally forgot about the songs. But this is a band called Destroy Boys. The song is called Locker Room Bully. I heard it on the Faction Punk on the old satellite radio, and it really kind of, it stuck out to me because I thought it's kind of a clever song, and it really kind of, I think it threw back a little bit to that kind of late 70s punk rock, the kind of sticking your tongue out at the establishment, sticking your tongue out at all the squares, and you know, kind of doing your own thing. So I kind of dug this song. It is called Locker Room Bully. It is by a band called Destroy Boys, and it is on the Punk and Potters podcast on the Backbreaker Podcast Network.
Hunting witches has turned into hunting bitches, and for some reason I can't seem to relax. A favor and find out the facts before you come to my door ready to attack. I like to be above it all, but your words are like poison. I know it's never gonna stop, so I might as well join them. I hate biting my tongue when I know that's right, and I don't like being mean, but I will run from a fight. Just cause you're unfulfilled doesn't mean you need a
That is Destroy Boys on the Punk and Potters podcast. My name is Big Bad Boris. It is Ask Boris, Volume 2, with Mike Maloney.
Just Mike the Ref's fine. I've given up that people are just going to butcher my last name. And every time I try to get rid of Mike the Ref, it just seems to come back. So I've just taken it on Twitch and adopted it. So
I think I'm going to get you and Scotty together, and you guys can hash out your differences too.
We got no differences other than the fact he can't speak.
Sounds like a difference to me.
Anyway.
All right. Let's continue.
All right. Speaking of speaking of people that don't fit in each other's box properly, you've talked online about wrestling fitting or not fitting in your box. What do you consider your favorite type of wrestling?
See, it's funny. I don't have a favorite type of wrestling. I just know what I don't like. And I don't know if that makes any sense, but like, I like something that's compelling, that's got action. It's not insulting my intelligence. It's not lame. And it's not filmed on a movie set over 4 days with a special effects coordinator.
You're no fun. Jeez.
I'm trying to turn over a new leaf and not be so negative towards the things I don't like. And that's where the whole box comment came from. But yeah, the cinematic things, if you dig that, you know, go hard. It's just not my thing. But other than that, like I like, you know, it's just something that I can get into. If I can enjoy the action, if it's well done, if I can enjoy the characters, if there's a story, even if there's not a story, I watch a lot of, you know, indie shows where I don't know the guys and I can enjoy a wrestling match where I don't know the guys. If they can, you know, get me with the work, then, you know, I'm all good.
Absolutely. All right. That makes sense. All right. These next two are a little wordy here and
verbose, if you will. Verbose, if you will.
Verbose, yes. All right, here we go. Given the WWE's existence as the big league in sports entertainment / professional wrestling for a few decades now, how long before they become too top-heavy and end up collapsing under their own weight, giving rise to multiple smaller, more independent organizations?
Well, I think there's always going to be multiple smaller organizations. I mean, especially we really saw the kind of rebirth of indie wrestling back when WCW went out of business. And that's when, if you look right around that time, that's when TNA started. That's when Ring of Honor started. That's when Combat Zone started to get big and all the, you know, Jersey All Pro and all these smaller companies. And we're starting, you know, we're seeing that now again. So do I think it's ever going to go, like, WWE collapse under itself and go away? No. I don't know how much longer they can go the way they're going in terms of creative. The thing is, as far as I know, they're still very profitable.
Well, so after their show today, they just made $500 million.
Yeah. So there's no real reason financially to really change anything. The ratings are not good. Supposedly in that 18 to 49 demographic. And I don't really, I think that's splitting hairs when you start to get into demographics and not just looking at the ratings as a whole. Mm-hmm. But if you split hairs, supposedly the 18 to 49 demographic on Raw this past week was the lowest ever. But again, that's splitting hairs. And again, there's Monday Night Football and there's baseball playoffs and blah, blah, blah. And you can use numbers and tweak numbers to prove anything. I think we're kind of in that now, talking about all the small companies, because there are just so many really great independent wrestling companies right now. And there has been for, you know, especially since WCW went under, that's when like stuff really started to happen, but it's never going to go away. I don't know if it's going to change. I don't know what's going to happen if, you know, and I'm not wishing it by any means, because that's a gauche thing to do. But when Vince McMahon finally does pass away, I don't know what the future of that company is going to be. I'm interested in this like pay-per-view they've got going on New Year's Day, because a lot of people are talking about they might do a bit of a reboot with that. That's just speculation of people talking, and I think it'd be a neat idea. At the same time, remember WCW tried to do that. Remember when they stripped all the belts and everything, and they tried to do a reboot, and it just got worse. So who knows? But I mean,
yeah, on the positive there, it did create one of the greatest podcasts ever in the New Blood Rising.
New Blood Rising. That's absolutely true. But yeah, I think we're seeing right now all these smaller companies, and there's new ones popping up every day. And I think it's good. There's lots of places for the boys to work, and it's a big feeder system for those guys who want those big contracts. And it's just places for guys to work who may not even want to, you know, they may not want to go up and move up to WWE. Maybe there is guys like that. Maybe they don't want to go to WWE. They don't want to go to AEW. They want to work their indies and have fun and maybe get a little bit more control and do the matches they want to do. And I think that's great too.
Well, the biggest example you can have of that, and we talked about him earlier tonight, when Spencer Love had an interview with Artemis Spencer, he said that right now he's at a point of his life where the optimal thing for him is to train people right now, not to be in the Fed or whatnot. So, yep. And the amazing work that he's doing at the Lions Dojo in Vancouver, or the Lions Den Dojo there, it's absolutely fantastic.
And the more quality guys that you have training in that next generation, which is going to take, you know, trainees away from those like shystery trainers. And I don't think there's as many shystery trainers as there was maybe, you know, 20 years ago, but the more quality guys who like MRB and like Artemis Spencer and these like good quality schools, I mean, it's only just going to train better talent.
I think the biggest thing that's happening right now, we're going to talk about this in the third section here. It's the production of these companies just has to get better. That's what this is doing right now. The overall production of the product, the overall production of the online material, the product that's being produced has been at the floor. It's been raised. That's the biggest thing out of this mm-hmm. now too, because mm-hmm. people see it and they want to be attracted to it. So, mm-hmm. But anyway, let's move on to our, this is going to be a dicey one here. So,
Dicey.
I think it's safe to say that professional wrestling is predominantly relied on tapping into the male power fantasy for its popularity, longevity, which has oftentimes resulted in fostering misogynistic, homophobic atmospheres and attitudes. Wrestling has, quote unquote, gotten better, so to speak. But does it still have work to do? And what steps do you think as a whole need to be taken to create a more inclusive experience?
I think every industry in entertainment or any kind of industry still has work to do. And I think it's never going to get to that perfect place that we want it to be. I think wrestling has taken huge strides in terms of that kind of thing and dealing with the homophobia and the misogyny and that kind of thing, because you look at the way the women are treated now, in terms of being, you know, respected for their athleticism and treated equal. And you can see a guy wrestling a woman now and nobody bats an eye about it. Like, there's matches where I don't even think about it till halfway through. I'm like, oh yeah, this is an intergender match. It's just, you know, it's two wrestlers wrestling. But I definitely think that as a whole, because I mean, you go back again, maybe 20 years ago, and you listen to some of the things that are being said in the crowd. It's just, it's like by today's standards, it's awful. And now you've got, there's so many, you know, openly gay and openly, like, there's so many transgender talents and athletes, and there's full shows that are put on just for, you know, those transgender athletes. And I think, I don't know if I've told this story before, but when it really hit me that things were kind of changing, it was, I want to say it had to be at least a couple of years ago. I was watching a GCW show, and you know, the old, you know, they would do spots like back in the day where, you know, like a tag team match, and one guy would be down laying on his back and they would drop toe hold his partner and his head would hit his crotch. And, you know, the fans would all chant, you suck dick, you know, stuff like that. And it was a GCW show, and being a GCW show, there was a weapon. It was a big dildo. Okay.
Okay.
And it was either wrapped in barbed wire or it had thumbtacks stuck on it. I can't remember which. This is, you know, a GCW was one of the deathmatch things.
Yep.
And I don't remember who the wrestlers were, but wrestler A took either thumbtack or barbed wire dildo and stuck it in wrestler B's mouth. And of course, fans started chanting, you suck dick. And then they stopped and started chanting, but that's okay. That's okay. And I was like, holy shit, that's fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're not hearing, you know, show your tits chance and she's a crack whore chance. And there's so many talented women right now. And, you know, the fact that like Nyla Rose is openly transgender, and it's never, to my knowledge, ever been mentioned. Like, everybody knows it, and she's talked about it in interviews, but it's never been mentioned on their TV. She's just Nyla Rose, female wrestler for AEW. So, I mean, there's always work to do in terms of things like that. But in terms of how it was, especially the wrestling business, which is, you know, was always very kind of macho and male oriented, huge strides.
Yeah.
I just said a lot of words. I hope that made sense.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to get my words together about it because this is one I want to pop into as well. I know personally, even on a local scene here, as soon as 2 years ago, I've heard some chants that were, I got a story for you too. I was at an RCW show. It was 2018. I was actually working the tape, working my commentary gig. And we had a wrestler that looked Arabic and was wearing parachute pants. Mm-hmm. And the chant basically coming from the crowd that started up was Gay Aladdin.
Okay.
And this is like 2 years ago. And all of a sudden we have another set of fans. You'd be going on one side, Gay Aladdin 2019, Gay Aladdin mm-hmm. 2019, yeah. Like just basically telling the other set of fans to shut up.
Yeah.
And obviously we're not in a perfect world yet, and far from it. There's a lot of things we still have to have. And
we're probably never going to be, but I mean,
it's all about moving forward. That's what it is. It's about moving forward and moving positively forward and making sure nothing happens again. All right. From all that seriousness to something not so serious.
Okay.
Even though it says right at the front. No, seriously. Rollins or Danzig? Who wins? And you can't say the fans.
Oh, if they're going to scrap it out. Oh, Henry Rollins. 10 times out of 10. There's a video that you could probably find on YouTube of Glenn Danzig, and he's in the back of a gig, like in the, I don't know what you call it, the locker room or whatever you call it, backstage, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And he's getting into an argument with one of the guys in the opening band, and the guy in this opening band just knocks his block off and just KOs him, and it's super, super funny. And yeah, I think Henry Rollins takes Danzig 10 times out of 10.
All right, fair enough.
Good. I think it'd be a good scrap though. Like if they did like a legit like shoot fight, you know, I'd watch that.
Nice. All right. Best deathmatch wrestler on the scene today.
Hey. Oh boy. there's so many. The first one that springs to mind is Alex Colon, because Alex Colon first and foremost can work. He's a good wrestler, and he kind of he uses that, mixes it in with the deathmatch stuff. I think Drew Parker does a lot of that stuff too. I wish Drew Parker was more well known in North America, but he spends a lot of time in Japan working for Big Japan. I think G Raver is very athletic and very good. Nick Gage is losing a step, I think, but I think his body is beat to shit, and I think that his brain's a little bit messed up. Like after that Moxley match he had a couple of weeks ago, he was trying to cut a promo and you could tell that his lights were out a little bit. And I'm worried that he's just like, he keeps saying he's just going to keep going until he can't go no more. And I'm worried that he's going to do some permanent damage to himself. But I mean, it's, you know, he makes his own decisions, but yeah, Alex Colon is one of the guys that really springs to mind. I think, I don't know if he's doing them much anymore, but Ricky Shane Page also very good. Mm-hmm. In terms of kind of mixing in the violence with some actual wrestling and trying to make things make sense and logical. Those are the guys that kind of spring to mind. I'm sure I'm missing somebody very obvious, but those are the ones that kind of sprung to mind. Another big tournament's coming up. The Nick Gage Invitational is coming up, I believe, early next month. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, Matt Corona is going to win that, right?
he is a deathmatch legend.
Absolutely. All right. Speaking of weapons, what's your favorite deathmatch weapon?
All right. My favorite, I love the light tubes for a couple of reasons, because A, they look good when they explode. They sound good when they explode. It's a big deal, especially if you get a bunch of them together. It's a great visual and it's a great sound. But I'm going to tell you a deathmatch thing that I don't like, and it's not for the reason that you think. I don't like fire. And it's not necessarily because fire is very dangerous, which it obviously is. It's very dangerous. It's very unpredictable. I don't like it because half the time, if not more, they're going to take that lighter fluid and they're going to pour it all over the door or pour it all over that table. And then they're going to get that lighter and they're going to try to light it. And the fucking thing is not going to light, and it's not going to light. And they're going to do it for 45 seconds. It totally kills any believability in this match. It totally kills any momentum, and they can't get the shit to light. And it's just horrible. especially if especially if you're outside.
Yeah.
But I've seen it a whole bunch of times where they sit there for 45 seconds and like just like watch a wrestling match and then just like imagine the guys just stop wrestling for 45 seconds. That's a fucking eternity to just stop. Even if the one guy's beat up and he's selling, 45 seconds of watching this guy, the guy who's trying to light it looks like an idiot. And it takes you right out of it. So, I mean, yes, it's dangerous and it's unpredictable and it's not safe, but also if you can't get it to light, it's just going to kill your match.
All right. Well,
so we're pro light tube and anti fire.
That works out. Pro light tube. you're the expert in them. So, but you were talking about being outside. What's your favorite venue to visit?
Like for, that I've worked in or that I've been to, or
that'll be the next question. Just being a fan of wrestling, what's your favorite venue that you visited?
That I visited. Oh boy.
Like you were there as a fan.
There's been a few. I mean, the WrestleMania is obviously kind of stick out because, you know, it's WrestleMania. The second time I went down to WrestleMania, when we went to New Orleans, the Ring of Honor show was at this place called the Lakefront Arena, which I believe is on the campus of one of the universities. And just the way that it was built, it had a very small floor and then it kind of sloped up into like the stands and it was looked like you were very on top of it. You weren't really separated from it. So that was really cool. I don't know. I've been to a lot of like just kind of normal venues, nothing really super fancy. I was outside the ECW arena. I didn't get to go in, but I was outside.
Okay.
I think that Rec Room was a cool venue. It kind of reminded me a bit of Hammerstein Ballroom, just in terms of like everything just went up. There was a big wall of floors that just went straight up and it was kind of cool. I bet the visual from up top must have been really cool.
It was when you were able to lean over. So they had a counter up there that was a little harder to get over, but once you stood up or leaned over, you saw most of the ring and it looked pretty good there.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing how that's going to come across on video and where they're going to put their cameras and stuff. I'm excited about it.
Absolutely. Favorite venue you worked at?
Well, I mean, come on. It's obvious. Come on.
I know. I just want to give you the privilege of saying it.
The goddamn Saddle Dome is the favorite venue I worked at. And I actually legitimately worked that venue too. I was in the Battle Royal. So when I got eliminated from that Battle Royal, I wanted to walk to Center Ice and kiss the Center Ice thought, but I thought that people would make fun of me. So I did, but I really wanted to.
Fair enough.
Cause I've never been like, I've been to the Saddle Dome a bunch of times and I've been on the floor a bunch of times for like back in the day when I lived in Calgary for concerts and stuff, but I've never been on the ice. Like with the Flames logo and stuff there. So that was really cool for me, like to be on the ice.
Nice.
And, I snuck, like we had a lot of downtime because we got there, I want to say at like 1 PM and we didn't go on till after the game was over at like 9 or so.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a lot of downtime and I snuck out onto the Flames bench for like a couple of minutes and just kind of sat on the bench for a while. I played with the goal light.
Nice.
And, I actually have a video on my phone. I should tweet it after this goes up. But I got a video on my phone of me pressing the goal light. And there was an epic argument. This is a little backstage thing. I don't know if I've ever talked about this, but they had us in the Roughnecks locker room because they didn't want to put us in the Flames one, obviously. And the Hitmen were using there. So they had us in the Roughnecks locker room. And again, when you got... there must have been maybe like 20 of us all together, like 20 wrestlers / crew, and you give them a lot of downtime, just like nonsense takes place. And there was a very, very, and I think I might even have this on my phone as well, but I can't post it for obvious reasons, a very intense discussion on the proper way to wipe your butt. Oh, and this was like, it was literally like people screaming at each other, and again, I hope I don't get heat for this because it was just funny. Like, it wasn't like mad, it was just like a funny thing. But right in the middle of this discussion was MRB and Colton Kelly discussing their various tactics for how to wipe your butt. And MRB is like literally laying on the ground demonstrating, and he's in his gear at this point, and he's laying on the ground and he's demonstrating the proper way to wipe your butt. Oh my god, it was hysterical. And I'll this is going to go up, what, Friday morning, I assume? Yes. I'll edit it up and send it to you tonight.
All right, that works.
Yeah, I'll tweet out the video of me playing with the goal light because it actually made a sound and I was worried I was going to get thrown out. But I wish I could play that video of but it's there's language and stuff. But yeah, it was yeah. It was
we'll find an appropriate after hours spot for that. All right, the third part of the question, favorite venue you'd want to work at?
There's two that I work at, but there's two that I want to go to. I want to go to the ECW Arena and actually go inside and watch a show. And I want to go to Cork and Hall.
Sounds like a great pick. Great yeah. picks on both ends yeah. there.
And so, I kind of want to go to the Showboat in Atlantic City where kind of GCW's kind of home base is now. It looks like a cool room for wrestling. But nice. Yeah, the ECW Arena and Cork and Hall are like bucket list things.
And then you got Shibata working last.
I had no idea till I was scrolling through Twitter at work today and I was like, holy shit, did Shibata wrestle last night? That's fucking awesome.
It wasn't an official match. It was 5 minutes of exhibition grappling.
But even that, so.
That's what they're calling it. But yeah.
Like they thought he was going to die.
Yeah.
So, I mean, good for him.
Absolutely. All right. Our last
question. I'm sure Zach took good care of him too.
Oh, I'm pretty sure there's a reason why Zach was picked as the choice for that match.
I mean, but, I got a new Japan subscription. Why the fuck don't I just watch it?
details. Yeah,
I keep forgetting I have that. And it comes out of my bank account on the first of the month, 999 yen. I'm like, oh shit, I've watched zero G1.
Well, it's time for you to catch up here. Yeah, so,
kidding.
All right, last question before we go to our second musical interlude here. Your top five managers. And I'm assuming Thaddeus Archer is number one through four.
You know what? I'm gonna break kayfabe. I like that guy. He's a good dude. He says nice things about me. Thaddeus is a good guy.
He is a good guy. Just you know, don't put him and Warren in the same room sometimes.
No, fuck God, no. I mean, you gotta go Heenan number one. I mean, yeah. I think that's literally a non-negotiable for like even like after his managing days are over. Like the commentary he did for Raw and even into his, you know, WCW, even though I know on good authority, because I was told by him that he didn't have a good time towards the end of his WCW run. But even, you know, that commentary there was always good. I mean, Heenan's up there. I don't really remember anything of the Dangerous Alliance because we didn't get WCW TV back in those days. So I don't really know what Heyman did in those days, but what he's done with Brock and those guys, I'm a big Heyman guy. I think that it's a shame he couldn't get Curtis Axel over. I mean, if Heyman can't get you over, then, you know, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, hell, the stuff he was doing with Punk.
I forgot about that. Yeah, that was good stuff.
Yeah, like somebody who definitely does not need a manager got shot that much higher just by having Heyman around.
Yeah, for sure. Slick had a really good song. Come on, Jive Soul Bro. That's good shit. God, who else was there? There's so many. No, those are the ones that kind of stick out. I mean, Jimmy Hart never really did anything for me. I mean, Fred Blassie, a little bit before my time.
And then Fuji was another stereotypical just stand.
I loved
him with his cane.
I loved his promos, though. Wama Yokozuna. I thought Mr. Fuji's promos and stuff were awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Heenan really like just head and shoulders above the rest. JJ Dillon was okay too.
Well, then you got Colonel Rob Parker, Tennessee Lee. What?
I know nothing about him.
Well,
like I know of him, but like nothing sticks out in my mind.
Probably the only thing that you would remember since you didn't get WCW would be Jeff Jarrett's first manager.
Oh, okay.
And then, you got Paul Bearer, you got Brother Love.
No, I never cared for Brother Love. Paul Bearer, you know, again, he worked well for what he did with Taker and with Mankind a bit. But
story, that time when they were introducing Kane there, and that story work that he did.
Yeah, he cut some good promos. He's alive! Your brother is alive!
And the level of seriousness that he had in there. Like
my impression needs some work, I think.
Actually, it's not bad. All right, but on that note, let's head towards what do we got on tap for our next musical interlude here,
all sir? Right, I forgot the name of the song, so I'm going to bring it up here. The band's called Mace Avenue, and it's actually a band that I found on Reddit. Every once in a while I'll pop into the punk rock subreddit just to kind of see you know, what, you know, people like to plug shows, and there's sometimes cool videos and stuff to watch. And there was this band called Mace Avenue that, you know, they put some of their stuff up on Reddit to see what people thought of it. And this might sound stupid, or I'm not explaining it the way that I want to, but I think it's obviously it's a no-brainer, you know, to put your band up on, you know, the punk rock subreddit. But I think it's also kind of brave in a way, because you can just get skewered and it will just kill your self-confidence. Because if you, you know, put up a song and people don't like it on Reddit, there's, you know, the keyboard warriors, they're not going to mix words. They're going to tell you that you're shit, your band fucking sucks, you should kill yourself, you should quit, never play music again. And I don't know if I could take that. So I think it's logical, but also kind of brave in a way to like put yourself out there on a worldwide kind of message board that's kind of maybe known for some negativity on the internet. Does that make sense?
Negativity on the internet, that never happens.
But yeah, so I checked it out, and I thought, you know, what I heard I really liked. So I checked it out on the old Spotify, and they had an EP, and I downloaded this EP and I listened to it in the car, and I quite liked it. So the band is called Mace Avenue. I assume they're American. I didn't really do much reading about it, but the song is called I Didn't Ask. So we're going to go to that right now, and then we're going to answer some more questions on the Punk and Power Drivers podcast.
I didn't ask for your fucking opinion. I didn't ask for your fucking opinion. That thing you wanted, well, you can't have it. That thing you wanted.
Avenue, that is I Didn't Ask on the Punk and Pod Rivers podcast on the Backbreaker Podcast Network. Is that what it should call the Backbreaker Podcast Network?
I would say Backbreaker Podcasts, because it's technically part of the Backbreaker Media Network. Let me throw it out for you right now. I'll just call it straight up, easy way to remember this.
Okay.
The reason I don't call this Backbreaker Media anymore in like for everything we do. Have you ever heard of Rebel Media?
Yes.
Are they any kind of reputable media right now?
No. Yeah, the word media has got kind of a bit of a negative connotation to it. So yeah, I totally get what you're saying.
So I broke everything down. We got three groups now. We got Backbreaker Video for our wrestling videos and whatnot. We got Backbreaker Gaming for our gaming channels and gaming videos. And we have Backbreaker Podcast for the excellent work that you do here, sir.
All right. So here we go. I'm going to do this again. Are you ready? Right. Mace Avenue. On the Punk and Pod Rivers podcast, on Backbreaker podcast, my name is Big Bad Boris, joined by Mike the Ref. We're doing Ask Boris Part 2.
He's laughing because this is take two on this part here. So
that's all right. I like it.
Absolutely.
I just want to make sure I get, you know, I get the call letters right, so to speak.
Half the time I can't. So you wish anyway.
Fair enough.
Let's get into these third set of questions here for you. And most of these have to do with production, but there is one question here that just has me completely baffled. Okay. But we'll get to that one near the end here. But first off, if you could call one match over and over like Groundhog Day, what would it be?
That I've done? Oh boy.
Either that you could do or have done.
God, there's so many. Marky and AJ was a lot of fun to call. The Iron Man match between BVD and MRB. It was really fun to call. And I wish I could almost go back and do that one again, because if you go back and listen to it, when the Iron Man match ends, BVD wins, but all I talk about is MRB. And the reason is because that was kind of around that time was when I started to get really tight with MRB, and we talked quite often. And I think we might've even been working out together at that time, but like he always talked about how important this match was and how he wanted to be so good and how he was doing all this extra, you know, he was working out extra hard to make sure that he was in shape and didn't blow up, and he was really excited for it and he wanted to be good. And when it was good, I was so happy for him that that's how it came out on commentary. And I'm talking about MRB and I'm like, shit, BVD won the fucking match. So why are you talking about BVD? So I wish I could go back and do the ending of that over again, but that one was a lot of fun. You know, some of the guest host matches we did, there's another good thing actually is there's matches I wish that I could go back and call live that I called after the fact, because we didn't start doing the commentary live until a couple of years ago before everything would be done in post-production. So there were matches that I had seen like three times before I actually called them. And even way back when I first started doing them, when Phoenix Taylor and Michael Avery were doing the production and those, like those AJ Joe matches, I wish I could have done those live and not, you know, sitting in Phoenix Taylor's living room, you know?
Yeah, I know. Like personally myself, and I know I could jump in a little bit more on this topic here, because I think you and I are the two top video producers in Alberta right now. And I find it so much easier to call a show live than tape, just because of that fact that you sort of know what's going to happen, but you don't really know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it just gives you that little extra oomph of excitement there that you can throw in.
Yeah, absolutely. I like going in fresh.
All right. So
I need to know who goes over just because it's like, so I can play the right music, but like, I didn't know MRB was getting his haircut that day. And that genuine reaction when the scissors came out and my mind clicked, I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
This is heavy shit. So, you know, I like that. I like. There's certain things, you know, that I need to know just to get, like, the point of things across. But sometimes not knowing and getting that genuine reaction is better.
Absolutely. All right. So what keys do you give someone who wants to try his or her hand at commentary and video production?
Actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because yeah, I sent Warren a big long thing, and he didn't ask for it, but I thought I would be nice and just send him kind of some pointers of what I think is important. A couple of things I've always thought is, A, just know what you're selling. If it's a move or a match or a feeling or a story, know what you're selling. One of the things that I'm really bad for, depending who I'm doing the commentary with, is don't make it about you. It's about what's going on in the ring. Mm-hmm. And I can be bad for this when I'm calling matches with like good friends of mine, especially like when I call matches with Andy, sometimes we sidebar into him and I like bantering and bickering, and I got to kind of snap out and be like, shit, it's not about us. It's about what's going on in the ring.
But there's also times where you can actually say that might be a good thing, depending on the quality match in the ring too.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, true. But you also, you want to make sure that you're not disrespecting, you know, what's going on in there. Even if it's maybe something not great or the guys are struggling or what have you, you still owe them that respect, I think. And one thing that I was really bad for when I first started is I would call every move, every single move I would call. And then I realized after a while that, you know, people can see what's going on. So maybe less moves and more emotions. And also if you're quiet a bit, it kind of gives them a chance to kind of, it's just like, you know, the guys in the ring will do, you know, three or four big moves and they'll stop and they'll slow down for a couple seconds. So the fans can kind of process what happened. I think it's the same thing with the commentary. You just kind of back off a little bit and just let it soak in and, you know, just things like that, you know?
Absolutely. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And I also think like, if for example, for Clandestine, the first Clandestine, there were people that I had never met, never seen wrestle before because they work for the other companies. And I grabbed my pen and my paper and I went and I talked to them and I was like, tell me a bit about your character. Do you have any special names for moves? Just that way that you're armed with some things. Because if I am calling a match with somebody I don't know, and against somebody I do know, it might seem like I'm a little biased towards the other person just because I have more information about them.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that you can say is just you got to either know what you're doing or fake it real well. And the best way to fake it real well is to do your research.
Yeah, for sure.
So who is your inspiration / who do you look at when it comes to your commentary style? How did you develop it? And who do you consider sort of a mentor in wrestling?
I don't know if I have a style. I think there's things that I say like all the time just because they're like natural things. One of the people I like a lot, I don't know if I kind of emulated it, but somebody I liked a lot is Joey Styles, especially back in the day, just because he used to call things by himself. And a lot of the stuff in PWA I called by myself as well. So, you know, I felt like if he can do this and call everything by himself, then I can do it too. And if he can be compelling and get the guys over, and he kind of got himself over a little bit too with his catchphrase and stuff. Big Joey Styles guy. There's some guys that are out now that I didn't like at first, but I do like now. Like I was a big Kevin Kelly fan when he was with Ring of Honor. I thought he fit that company really, really well. And when he left and Ian Riccoboni came in, I did not like Ian Riccoboni at all, but he's grown on me over the past few years. And I think that he's really good. And him and Caprice Coleman have a good thing going on. Same thing with GCW. I did not like Kevin Gill at first, but then I realized, you know, he's grown on me over the years. And I think that he's perfect for that company. I don't think that Kevin Gill would be good, maybe calling a more traditional company, but he works for GCW. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah. You got to work towards your product, right? When you're a very story-based company, just like WWE, you're not going to be in there throwing technical move after technical move in your commentary and vice versa, right?
Yeah, I feel bad for what Jim Ross has become, unfortunately. I mean, I think he's kind of tarnishing the legacy a bit, but I mean, you can't say anything bad about Jim Ross. He's Jim Ross. I think Excalibur is really good. I like what he brings because he does a good mix of telling stories but also getting over moves and knowing names. That's one of the things that Duke said that he really liked about me. He's like, Boris, I love you because you know the names of moves. I'm like, okay, I know the names of moves because I'm a wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know if I have a style, but as for having a mentor in wrestling, I really have to give a lot of credit to Tex Gaines, because he's the one who, like, when I was ring announcer for PWA, because Mike McGuire was ring announcer for PWA and he got a radio job somewhere. I want to say Fort McMurray, but I might be totally wrong on that. And they, you know, they asked me to ring announce and I had a lot of fun with that, but I kind of wanted to get more, you know, I wanted to perform. And, you know, Tex Gaines went to Curtin, got me to be his manager. And I learned a little bit, not a lot from Tex, because he's it's not a slam, just like he's a unique guy.
Oh yeah.
So I wouldn't say that I learned a lot from him. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, but he got me to do a lot of things I wanted to do.
He'll put you in the best position to succeed. That's, yeah. I think that's the best way to put it.
And it's not even that. It's just that he's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, he got me to be in a battle royal, and you know, he got me to take some bumps, and you know, he got me on the Bad News Allen tribute show. When I was younger and stupid, I wanted to blade. So like we did a spot in a match where I got hit in the head with a cane and he bladed me. Just dumb shit like that I wanted to do. And he's like, well, you want to do it? Then we'll do it. And I think that was really cool. I've learned a lot from Kurt. I've learned a ton from MRB. MRB is a smart guy and he's got, you know, a lot of that, you know, learning from TJ. I've learned a lot from Dirty Duke, a ton from Andy. sometimes we butt heads a little bit on things in terms of kind of new school versus old school, but he's a really, really smart guy. Just been really lucky to have a lot of the people around that we've had around.
I think the key thing you can learn from that statement is just be willing to listen and be willing to learn.
Yeah. Open,
no matter who you are.
Open ears and shut mouth. And it's funny because like there's like not a lot of people, but a couple of people coming and asking me for advice. Not a lot, very, very few, but like it has happened a couple of times. And it's like, well, shit, I feel like I'm still learning myself. But I guess when you stop learning, that's when it's time to hang it up.
Absolutely. Because
this business is ever like the fundamentals are always there, but it's ever changing.
And the wrestling landscape, especially like in Alberta here, compare it to when I started in 2015, it's night and day right now.
Yeah, for sure. And that PWI Women's 150 came out, man, Alberta's going to be all over that thing next year because there are so many talented ladies here. I'm excited to see where they're all going to fall. And good for Giselle. She's killing it.
Yeah, Giselle, number 19 on that list, and started out here with the Storm Wrestling Academy. And I do believe that... Well, she started with RCW for a couple months and then moved on to PWA. That's where she had her major run in Alberta. So,
and it's funny because I've got like all the old footage of her, like her first appearances in PWA when she was valeting with Brett Morgan and stuff like that. Like I've got all that old footage. So if they ever need to make a DVD, I might make some money off that.
Well, I have her first match. So between the two of us, we
got...
Was it
RCW was her first match?
Yeah, it was a six-way match that she was involved in. It was actually the night that I actually got involved with the promotion because the ring announcer completely botched the format of the match and also mentioned the real name of the winner over the mic.
Oh no, that's horrible. Yeah. Well, then between us, we're going to get paid when the Giselle Shaw DVD comes out.
Definitely. So Boris, who's your favorite wrestling commentator?
If I had to pick one of all time, it'd be Joey Styles.
Yeah. All right. That I figured that'd be a slam dunk for you there. Now, here's one, and I'll be the first one to say that I'm the one who sent this one in because I want to know your opinion because it's a pet peeve of mine. What are your thoughts on all the camera cuts on WWE programming? Are there any specific tips that you have for anybody when it comes to editing video?
Okay, first of all, I'm going to put this out on Front Street right now, and I'm not going to lie and sit here and say that I'm a great video editor. I can't make really great fancy vignettes, but I think I can do a good job of filming a show. I can film a show, and I can try. I've tried to make really cool creative vignettes and stuff, but I've done some that I think are okay, like hype videos and stuff. But it's not really my thing, but I think I can film a show and I can make a show look good. So I'm not going to like toot my own horn about my video editing ability. I do the best I can. I taught myself. So if people like what I make, I appreciate that very much. Part of it for me, like that annoys me about that is, again, I'm used to watching a lot of indie wrestling and a lot of, and maybe that's not necessary. Okay. I'm used to watching shows that don't have that many cameras, but even a show like New Japan has like more cameras than any show, and they don't do all that stupid
shit.
No,
just not too many.
My pet peeves is the switching the cameras 50 times during a beatdown, and that like following the kendo stick up and down. It's like fucking Blair Witch. It's again, and maybe it's just because again I'm used to watching a show that has two cameras. And I think if it's done right and you know what you're doing, you can film a show with two cameras and it looks just fine. I've been doing it for, a decade. But yeah, it's very distracting. I think a little goes a long way.
Well, I know personally, like when we did Clandestine, we did four cameras. And the biggest thing when it comes to a camera cut is it should be for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
That whether it's to get a better view on a hold that's coming up or... Typically what you will do a quick camera cut in the middle of a move for is if you're looking at it and it doesn't look strong. Like if somebody's punches look really weak, I can understand the quick cuts because then it sort of takes your mind away from looking at the punches itself. But if it's happening that consistently in WWE, somebody needs to be doing some training. And I don't think the wrestlers are that bad.
No.
But you got any other?
It's just the way Kevin Dunn chooses to do business.
And it gives me a headache.
Yeah. The most cameras that I've ever used filming a show is three. I've had the hard camera, the single roaming camera, and I had the GoPro in the corner of the ring before Reed Matthews sat on it. So again, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm Martin Scorsese with 65 cameras. I have at the most three. But again, if you've got good camera people and people who know how to shoot wrestling, it's perfectly fine. I don't really have a lot of tricks. I don't switch too much. I think strategic switching can make a match seem faster paced, if that makes any sense. If you stick on one camera too long. My only pet peeve, and I see this, you see this a lot on the indies, and it was something that I actually was taught to me years ago by Phoenix Taylor, and then I learned it again when I went to Nate, is you don't film against the fucking hard camera. And there's so many indies that are bad for doing that. Mm-hmm. All your cameras need to be pointed in the same direction. If you've got a guy who's going to go around either side and film against the hard camera, it's just when you cut your cameras, the guys flip back and forth, and it's very like confusing to the eye. So that's like, I love my son. He does a great job of filming, but he takes the direction. He's better now, but when he first started, I stuck him in the corner and I said, this is your corner that you film from. You stay in this corner and you shoot the same direction as the hard camera. There would be guys that would go and fight on the floor in the far back corner of the Northgate Lion Center, like way in the back corner. And he filmed it standing in that corner of the ring. In my mind, I'm like, why the fuck didn't you go? And he's like, you told me to stay in this corner. Well, where the fuck are the guys who are fighting? They're way in the back of the room. But again, he followed my directions to a T. And no, I'm really lucky. He's become like MRB wouldn't have used him for Clandestine if he wasn't a good cameraman. So I'm lucky to have him.
I find it funny. Well, big ups to Braden here, but I got to bring up this story here because it sort of ties into what you're saying here. Clandestine one, I actually got a chance to sit down with Braden and I was going over my directions like, okay, we got two hard cameras here. And a big shout out to Ian Mercer. He was working with RCW at the time. I'm not sure he's doing it now, but absolutely fantastic cameraman, both of them at Clandestine there. But the fact that he told me exactly what you said, he's like, yeah, I'm supposed to stay in the corner. I stay in the corner. I'm like, no, you are not staying in the corner. You're going to move tonight. And I just showed him, okay, this is the way you do it. And make sure your camera's mainly focused on this banner back here. If you're facing a direction, because the banner was opposite the hard cam. Yeah,
exactly.
And just, okay, you go this way, you go this way. And you guys look at each other and figure it out. Mm-hmm. And they did an absolute fantastic job there.
That show looked really good.
Absolutely. So, okay, we've gone through those. Oh, here's one for you. Very interesting point. How many Red Bull do you consume during a show, what you're calling?
during a show will usually be one, maybe two. Like I'll crack one at the start, and if it's done by the by intermission, I may have another one. Now, the Calgary trips... that's a whole difference. Like during the actual show, but like during the day of a Calgary trip, there can be like four, maybe five, because there'll be one on the road, and then there'll be one, you know, setting up, and then there might be one during the show, and then there might be one on the ride back. Because like I don't drive what we call the A car. I don't drive the A car anymore. What Ivan does, because we rent a van to fit us all in. But for years, I drove the A car. And so, you know, I need to stay awake on that ride back at 2 a.m. So MRB would always ride shotgun. And some of my favorite memories of those Calgary shows when I drove the A car is everybody like Bert, our Gabriel and what about Ivan and whoever else would be in the back sawing logs. And MRB would sit shotgun and we would just bullshit about 90% about wrestling. We would just bullshit about wrestling for the 3 hour drive and, you know, just good chats. And again, that's like a lot of times where I'd learn things from him and I'd, you know, give him my opinion and he'd say, well, that's good, but what about this? And sometimes I'd give him an opinion. He's like, oh, I never thought about that. So we have like really good chats, but yeah, there's been some Calgary shows where, you know, there'd be like four or five, which I know is not good for you, but I don't drink coffee.
So what size cans are these we talking about?
Oh, here? The big that's boys. The question. Big boys.
Yeah, that's what I want to bring up here. So they doctors listening right now, they can come in and check on you. So
yeah, I think I'm like 40% Red Bull by now.
Probably. So all the video work you do has got to be time consuming. How do you balance work and life and job? And I know we talked about it right at the beginning of the show here about why the podcast was delayed the way it was. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, how do you find time to do all this?
I could be a bit of a procrastinator, and it was really bad when I had to do the commentary at home, because, you know, with you know, at the time with the wife and the kids around, it's, you know, you need quiet and you need, you know, to have a good sound to record the commentary. So it'd have to be times when there's nobody around. And sometimes I just wouldn't be in the right mood to do it, which is why I like doing it live, because I'm in the mood and I'm ready and I'm fired up. So it's a lot faster when I didn't have to do commentary, because I could just edit the shows, slip in the commentaries I recorded, render it out, and we're golden. But doing it after the fact, you know, you got to edit it and then do the commentary, plug it all in, and it takes forever because my computer is slower and shit. But I don't think my turnaround of getting shows up is as fast as it could have been, because I was a bit of a procrastinator. But you just, you know, you find the time.
Fair enough.
You need some alone time sometimes to get the business done. But I miss it. It's been a long time. I don't know if I remember how to do it, to be honest. I haven't video edited anything in like over a year.
All right. Well, I'll give you some of my backlog you can work on. So
I'm not as good as you.
Oh no, you're definitely great at what you do, sir. Or else nobody would ask that. And all right, let's get to the second last question of the night. When can we see your archive footage available for sale/download?
What do you mean by archive footage? Just all the PWA stuff?
There is so much PWA stuff that you have in your backlogs. When can we see it and when can we buy it?
Because there's only like, if you go to the Pivot Share, like when's the first show from Pivot Share? Like 2017, maybe 2018? I don't even know.
I'd have to look here.
But I've got like, I started like filming myself in 2012. Before that, there was nothing for you for a few years, and before that was all the stuff that Grizz and Phoenix Taylor shot. But I started shooting everything in 2012, so I do have that's almost 10 years. I've got like a decade worth of stuff, and there's a ton of it that's never seen the light of day. I don't know, because there's shows that I have multiple cameras of that I never edited together because I didn't have anywhere to put full shows to sell or to broadcast until, you know, I discovered, I think it was you told me about the Pivot Share. So there is a backlog. I don't know what the legalities are in terms of who owns that footage. I believe the technical legalities is because I shot it. I believe I technically own it, but I wouldn't be a dick and just sell it for my own profit. Like a lot of people don't know, because I got some heat from, like, when I used to make DVDs, like DVDs have kind of gone the way of the dodo. And when PWA comes back, I don't know what the fuck's going on. That's a shoot. I'm not going to be making DVDs anymore because they're kind of archaic. But I used to got there a little bit of heat from a couple of guys because they thought that I was making money off the boys. Nobody knew the deal I cut with Kurt. Is I did all the work for the DVDs. I shot everything. I designed the covers. I burned the discs. I printed out covers. I assembled them all for myself. And I gave half the money to the company. And I don't think I've ever talked about this before, but yeah, I sold a DVD for $15. PWA got $7.50 and I got $7.50.
Yeah.
I don't know if I don't know if people thought that I was making these DVDs and keeping all the money for myself. I wasn't. I gave half of the money that I made for DVDs to the company. All the digital sales I kept for myself because it's a very small thing, and I haven't made a ton. Like, I've made a little bit of money off the digital sales, but because just as it was really starting to get hot, you know, we stopped. But I've made a little bit of money, but everything the DVD wise, which is what we did really well on at times, half that money went to PWA.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize how much we don't make off this stuff. So
considering the hours we put in, it's about the love.
But you know what? We're gonna have to find some place where we get some more of this footage up. And I think I might have a few ideas we could talk about off air here. So
because I got like three hard drives full of stuff from 2012 to now.
So between the two of us, I think we have what, 8 hard drives of Alberta wrestling here. So yeah. We need to get this up somehow. And I got a few ideas, but we'll chat about them.
And I think there's a market for it. I think there's stuff that people want to see.
Absolutely. And now let's get to our last question of the night. And I think you might shoot me for this one, but just don't shoot the messenger.
All right.
How can you seriously consider the Flames and Stamps as worthwhile watching?
Let me check in on the score of the hockey game now before I answer this question to see if I'm happy or I'm sad. Oh, my phone is so slow. I need
I would say the score last Saturday was rather appropriate.
It is 3-0. 3-0 final. Fuck you. That's right. I said it. Fuck you.
All right. You got your first win. Congratulations.
Born and raised in Calgary. It's just all I've ever known. I grew up like my dad was a huge Flames fan, and it was just always a thing. And I went through, and a lot of people don't know this, but I went through when I first moved here. I was still a big Flames fan, but I went through a tiny little Oiler phase just because I wanted to fit in and I was meeting people and making friends. But there's pictures you can find. If you look really, really hard somewhere in the world, there's a handful of pictures you can find around 1998 of me wearing Oiler shit just because I was trying to make friends and fit in when I first moved here. So I was,
you mean
like,
that's not Photoshopped?
No. I might even put one up somewhere. I've been trying to hide it just because I'm embarrassed. But no, it's just all I've ever known. Like, I just Stampeders, Jays, and Flames were always on in the house. And you know, you're loyal to your team.
Absolutely.
Like, even when they're fucking shitty.
Trust me, I was an Oilers fan throughout the 90s. I know that feeling.
Yep. I remember back in the mid to late 80s, they used to call Alberta Death Valley. Because nobody wanted to come here because they go through that road trip through Alberta and the Flames are really good and the Oilers are really good. Nobody wanted to play here.
Nope.
Not really like that anymore.
Not at all.
But those Battle of Alberta games are starting to heat up again.
Well, for one team.
They're getting... No, I just mean like the intensity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We need a good old goalie fight again, so...
You know what's funny about that? I was watching that game with Owen, my youngest son. Yep. And because he's an Oiler fan, I lost him to the dark side. And he was like, it'd be cool if the goalies fought in this game. Right, right at the opening faceoff. Literally, he said it. And like 10 minutes later, they were fighting. And I'm like, holy fuck, dude, let's go buy a lottery ticket. It was awesome.
And one last question. I'm pretty sure it's a quick kit. Owen's named after Owen Hart, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I just guaranteed to throw that in there. But yeah, that's our Q&A list here, Boris. We managed to survive Ask Boris 2.
Excellent. That was a lot of fun. I like giving my opinion. I probably sound like a giant doorknob, but it's fun for me. So that's what it's all about.
It's always good to get a different perspective, right?
Especially maybe for somebody who sees things a little differently, maybe because they're not in the ring getting the shit beat out of them.
Because your box is a little different compared to some others.
I have a very different box.
On that note...
So you picked a song. I asked you to.
It was told because I completely forgot to pick one last time. To the end,
you picked this song of Violet Orlandi doing a cover of a Metallica song. Explain to me, like, I know why you picked the song, but explain to the folks why you picked the song.
All right. Well, at the beginning of the show here, we talked about the Love Wrestling event that came up last week. It was, or at the time of this recording, it'd be 2 weeks ago. Or was it last week?
No, it was last week. It was
this week has been just a weird one for me. Sorry.
It was a week ago Friday when this is available to listen to.
So a week ago from the release here, we had the Love Wrestling show in Edmonton. And I've always respected MRB when he has been coming up with these remakes of classic songs. And he's used them for Clandestine. If you check any on the Twitter account for the Clandestine show, he's the one who does the post-show highlight clips that send out on Twitter. And he's always finding these great remixes to classic songs. Like a lot of people enjoy Christian's entrance music and they don't realize that is actually a remake. Stuff like that. Stuff mm-hmm. that's different.
Mm-hmm.
And just the feeling in the room when Blaze's music came on during that Love Wrestling show, right before the main event, they had the video package. They had this music blaring, and when he came out, you could just feel the energy exuding off of him. I hate to make it sound so grandiose, but it was.
Yeah, that was the whole point. It was supposed to be.
You could literally get goosebumps at that moment. And there were I think they said 365 was the attendance there for the sellout.
Three and change, what I heard, yeah.
But it felt like there was a couple thousand people there just from the energy from this song. And it's The Unforgiven by Metallica.
But Violet Orlandi, which I don't know if that's a band or if that's the name of the young lady who does the vocals, but kind of a cool, different take. And I like cover songs to hear like someone's a reinterpretation of something. So it's super cool. Thank you for joining me. This is always fun.
No problem. It's always a pleasure. And just a reminder, everybody, if you want to talk to me a little bit more, I'm on Twitch quite a bit here. MikeTheRef.live. If you don't like to type in a whole bunch of stuff, that's the web address.
How's the Metroid going?
If you want to watch me get very confused and very angry at things, since this is being recorded Friday, I'm actually doing a movie review for the DC Injustice film that just came out. And we're playing a little Injustice next Tuesday and Wednesday. And then for Halloween weekend, we'll throw up the Metroid again on Saturday. So,
okay, when you do the watch along for that Love Wrestling show, I want to throw my hat and be involved in that, if that's cool with you.
I'm going to have to find some way we could do that. But also, it's for people that this is coming out on Friday. Saturday night, I'm going to be doing a full watch along for not only AEW Dynamite on Saturday, but Impact Wrestling Bound for Glory. So if you want some insight and some discussion from somebody who's been working in the industry a little bit, feel free to stop by, say hi. It doesn't cost you a dime, and it's going to be 5 hours of me talking in front of a microphone. So
beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
Sorry, I'm full of cheap plugs today, but
hey, that's all right.
I want to make sure that I say this with all sincerity here, Boris. Thank you for all the work you do. I know that you stated you needed a little bit of a break here just to catch up, recharge, and whatnot. It's not easy in the part of the business we're involved in, especially when there's no consistency in shows right now.
Yeah.
But you're doing a fantastic job in all the work that you do.
I might, like I said on Twitter the other day, I might do one of those I'm available for bookings tweets and see if anybody's looking for my services, because I miss being behind the microphone and I miss being, you know, at the shows with the guys and the gals. So maybe I need to get back out there a little bit.
Yeah, I think I got to start digging out and finding you some spots too, you know, because, you know, I am the boss. So,
well, you know, that's how it works. All right. So this is The Unforgiven. It's Violet Orlandi. Thank you again, Mr. Malawani. Whatever. Next week, if everything goes according to plan, the Canadian Goose will be joining me, which I think is going to be interesting and a lot of fun. Thanks for checking us out. And we will talk to you guys all next week.